Hello and welcome to From Fear to Fire, secrets to overcome fear, embrace your gifts, and achieve success. This is the place where real people share real challenges, where you can find a common bond and uncommon wisdom through their journeys to help you move from fear to fire. My name is Heather Hansen O'Neill, and I am your host, and we have a wonderful guest today. But before we get to that introduction, we have a quote of the day, and I actually asked our guest for the quote, and I love it, so I'm going to use it. It's an Emerson quote. What you do speaks so loudly that I cannot hear what you say. Fantastic quote. But of course, I would expect nothing less from our guest. Michael Dominguez serves as the president and CEO of Associated Luxury Hotels International, also known as ALHAI in the industry. ALHAI is a global sales organization with a team of nearly 80 professionals located among 26 offices across North America and Europe. Prior to joining ALHAI, Michael served in sales leadership positions with MGM Resorts, Lowe's Hotels, Hyatt Hotels, Starwood Hotels, and many more. He is actively involved in leadership roles in the meetings and event industry and currently serves as the immediate past chairman on the International Board of Directors for Meeting Professionals International. He speaks in the industry often on topics of disruption, the state of the industry, the economy, and behavioral lessons. I have seen him speak. He's extraordinary. And he's also just a really nice person, which is such a fantastic combination. I'm really excited to introduce you to Michael Dominguez. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Heather. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, I'm really excited because every time I've ever spoken to you, I always walk away with an aha. So I'm certain we're going to get at least one aha for our listeners here today. So, you know, before I jump into anything too scary, do you want to give just a little bit more background on you and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that I'm getting asked the question often about my journey and my path. And, you know, not a surprise, I get asked a lot by students or people that are just starting in this industry. And the interesting part was I'm one of those. I didn't have a path. This was all by accident. I started in this industry literally bussing tables when I was with Hyatt Hotels when I was 15 years old. And it was truly by accident that I ended up in this industry. But along the way, you know, one of the things I always share with people, you will run into people, and I did, that took an active interest in my life and in my career. And yeah, they became my mentors. And when you get that, you want to hold on to that as much as possible and gain as much as possible. And I will tell you that, you know, I think my journey has one consistency, is that I learned from a lot of people, and I made sure to maintain the right perspective of humility as you continue along this journey so that you do learn from others. I think one of the things that can hold people back on that journey is, and you know, I know your whole mission is overcoming fear. I really believe people's inability to admit they don't know and that they're going to learn from everybody they meet comes from the fear of not being able to accept that I literally do not know everything. I will learn from everybody I come in contact with. And if you can be brave enough to have enough humility to approach everything in that perspective, I think that's what advances, because it provides clarity and you start to see the opportunities in the moments when you can actually make sure that you're strong enough to put your ego aside and to understand that.
I love that. I think that is really super important. And I've noticed that you're very transparent with that, where you are very open to any suggestions that anybody has. You'll take it in, you'll absorb it, you see how it might be able to fit for you, but you also have that generosity in your wisdom as well. So you have that great combination of being able to share and receive equally, and That's not exactly something that everybody has. So it's definitely appreciated by me when I come across it. I love that.
Well, yeah, you know, it's interesting. Along those same lines, is I have a person that's been working for me, And we were having this discussion, and the discussion was that she was asking for advice, and we had had a large meeting, and one of my pieces of advice was not to be so definitive. And then the comment came back to me. It's like, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, at times you're making a definitive statement instead of asking the questions that will help us get to that resolution. And when you make it a definitive, it sometimes puts people on the defensive instead of throwing out the question. And, and I gave an example is, I will word the exact same definitive of, oh, so that means we literally made a mistake and left money on the table, instead of sitting there and phrasing that in a question. It's okay, so knowing everything we know, does that mean we left money on the table? Because then we all come to that resolution. But what I thought was interesting was the commentary and the conversation continued where the comment that came back from her was, I like to, my definitiveness helps me to show my confidence. And I explained true confidence in yourself is the ability to be able to say, I don't know. I said, if you're truly confident, it is, you're going to say, I don't know. And that was a lesson I learned when I was the vice president of the Palm Springs Bureau. And I remember that one of the hardest bureaus in the country, because there were three different boards that we reported to. Three, one with seven mayors, seven city managers was the other one, and then all the industry folks. And it's just seven cities were funding the bureau. But I remember it was one of my first meetings, and I was presenting something, and the question came back to me from the mayor of Palm Springs, Ron Odin at the time. And Mayor Odin said, well, why is that, Mike? And I said, I don't know. But I don't have any kind of intelligence to be able to tell you why. I can guess, but I will go research and come back and I will give you that answer. After that meeting, he actually pulled me aside. He goes, you're refreshing, Dominguez, because you're the first person in that role to actually say, I don't know. And he said, so that tells me when you do tell me something, you actually know, because you're not afraid to tell me you don't. So it gives me a great deal of confidence of what comes out of your mouth. And I think it's one of the biggest lessons I took away as a leader that most people miss. They try too much in a meeting to have every answer. And I've always said, I don't have all the answers. I just know what question we should be asking. And I think that's the important takeaway in that piece. But true confidence comes from your ability to actually say, I don't know. I don't have the answer.
I think that's brilliant. And I do a lot of work in leadership like you do. And that's the thing. I mean, the system is made so that element of confidence is rewarded as you're moving up the ranks, but you're missing the reinforcement of asking the questions and the humility. And I love how you phrased it with there's bravery attached to humility, right? It takes a lot of bravery to say, I don't know, to be the true leader and get everyone else on board and have somebody else come up with the idea instead of you always being the one. And that's the difference between, someone who's a true leader that is inspiring in their leadership and brings people along with them.
I wholeheartedly believe in that, Heather. And, you talk about, humility. I'm always stressing that, look, what I do does not define me. My title does not define me. How I do it and how I treat people is what defines me. And that is how you take a very humble approach to, what we're doing. And you'll hear me be, I was inducted recently into the Hall of Leaders for our industry. And one of the commentary pieces that came out in the video that they had put together came from, the head of MPI. And he made the comment about, I've always been self-deprecating as long as he's known me. And that the humor that comes along, he always says, the quote was simply that his jaws hurt whenever we're together because we're laughing so much. But he said, Mike not only likes to have fun, but it's self-deprecating. Yeah. He's able to make fun of himself as well as others. And I do think that's the important part is, I say it often that we do serious work. It doesn't mean we have to be serious. And that is actually something I have brought to the table in many organizations that I just knew when a little bit of humor needed to be interjected because everything was so tense and so tight. And it's like, everybody needs to take a deep breath. And we just need to be able to relax just a bit. But I do think that, you know, when we talk about being humble, it's that perspective of it. And, you know, Warren Buffett says it brilliantly, you know, we're all born to die. And some people are like, well, that's the kind of morbid. He goes, no, the point is, the clock starts ticking the moment you're born. And by the way, it doesn't matter what you do in your life, what you think you've accomplished, how much money you think you have, we're all going to end up in the same place. And that's Warren's message, is at the end of it, it's what you do with what, you know, while you're here. It's not what you've accomplished. It's what you do with it. Yeah. And that is really, really focused on people and individuals. But I think if anything, if there's anything we can teach our younger executives and our younger, you know, generation coming through this is, you know, whenever I speak at universities, they say, what piece of advice do you have for me? And I say, get over yourself is number one. Get over yourself. And I would say that to adults as well. Yeah. Please get over yourself, because it's not about you. Mm-hmm. And then the second piece of advice is, every opportunity you have, every elective you can take, study behavioral science and psychology. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of really smart people that know nothing about people. And that's the issue. And that is a challenge as you continue to move forward. But I think it's funny. You have to be comfortable in yourself and know. And when I say get over yourself, you know, I have a friend of mine, and she's always joking that she knows I'm a hot mess, and that's what she likes about me. I'm the guy that will spill the thing that I'm not supposed to spill and be laughing as I do it, not embarrassed about it. It's knowing that you're a hot mess, and, you know, and you know me, that I love letterboards, and it's that letterboard that some days I think I'm brilliant, and other days I'm getting out of the car with my seatbelt on. You know, that's being a hot mess and being okay with it. And knowing,
I love
that,
those letterboards that you put out. They crack me up.
Well, and the whole purpose of that is that. My purpose is, can I make you smile once a day? And again, not take it all so seriously. And it doesn't mean I don't think I'm really good at my job. And it doesn't mean that I'm not really good at leading an organization. It also means, at the end of the day, I'm still the same. Even with all of that, I'm still the guy that literally is going to spill soup on the wrong person in the middle of a restaurant. It's just who I am. But it's being comfortable with that. And you've heard it many times, got to get comfortable in your own skin and
that
know who you
are. So important. Yeah.
And as long as I've known you, Heather, you're that.
Thank you. I do try to be, you know, just me. And most of the time I'm the one stumbling up the steps.
Well, and here's the thing, when you stumble up the steps, and I know this about you, you're laughing harder than anybody else.
Oh, 100%.
And that's what I mean. As long as I've known you, you've been comfortable in your own skin. And I think it's what makes you successful. And I also think that it's what leads you to talk about overcoming fear, because fear is worried about what everybody else thinks.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, failure is only if you're worried about the optics of it. You know, at the end of the day, it's okay. A failure is just a lesson, and then you move on. But the only reason you'd be afraid of that is because you're worried about everybody else's thoughts. And I don't. My journey isn't anybody else's responsibility but mine. So why should I be worrying about everybody else?
I wish that you would have told me that like 20 years ago. That was one of my biggest hurdles, was this need to please other people and worrying too much about what other people thought. I mean, I finally feel like an element of freedom with that. And I guess with that comes the confidence to know that I am who I am, and I'm doing the best that I can every day, and I'll start again tomorrow. Right. And so, I think that's a big one for me. And it's a daily activity to overcome that. Now, you know, we've been talking about leadership, and it leads me to think about teams, and you have an awesome story that is kind of related to a belief system where you've given it to all of your team members. And I would love for you to share that story. I'm really into stories. So can you tell about that a little bit?
Yeah, I absolutely can. And you know, it's funny because, thank God to a 2017 book that was published called Culture Code by Daniel Coyle, which was a bestseller. It allowed me to show people that I'm not completely out of my mind when I used to tell the story. because he actually covers it in his book for about 50 pages. But I am a diehard fan of the San Antonio Spurs. And what people don't understand usually when I say that, it's not about them as a basketball team. It's their organization and their culture. But San Antonio is a small market team. You know, they're not LA, they're not New York, they're not Chicago. They're a very small market. It's their only sports franchise. And San Antonio is the most successful sports franchise in any sport over the last 22 years. And most people don't know that. And, you know, Sports Illustrated had a cover back in 2009. It was called The Quiet Dynasty because they just go about their business. And what's interesting is, to just give you some high-level points on what this culture has done, they've been in the league since 1976. They have missed the playoffs four times since 1976. They are the longest streak right now active at 22 straight years of playoff appearances. They have the best winning percentage in the NBA in history, past the Celtics, the Lakers. They literally have a winning record against every other NBA team in the NBA. The only team to say that. You can go on with the records, and it's just amazing at their longevity because they're the small market, kind of understated team. But their whole culture has been about this unselfishness and about this team ball that literally they share the ball. Nobody, and you know, Popovich says that he's their coach. He says it well, that they're a bunch of people that got over themselves long ago. And that's the common. They also have, which I'm really impressed with, the only female assistant NBA coach in the NBA. She's been there for 4 years, and you don't hear much about it because they've never made a big deal out of her gender. And Pop always says she's there because she's a great coach, not because she's female. She's a brilliant basketball mind. But their whole organization was built on this thought process of it's a process, and it is something that we continue to drive towards, something larger. And there is a story, and I actually, that you love stories. Here's a cool one. When I speak on culture and I speak on leadership, I tell this story. I show this video. It's called A Beautiful Game that Magic Johnson narrates, and it really talks about the Spurs. And it's interesting that I'm telling this, and I'm speaking at this group, for this group, and later I get asked to go to the president's reception. The president wanted to introduce me to somebody, and it was somebody who actually works for the owner of the Spurs other company. And he told me, hey, everything he said was accurate. And by the way, have you ever seen the locker room? And I made the joke, well, how the hell would I have ever seen the locker room? And he said, well, when he comes to San Antonio, you know, let me know. And people say things you don't know. And I do remember, I end up sending him a quick text saying, I'm going to go see mom and dad over Easter. If the offer is still open, I'd love to see the locker rooms. And by the time I woke up the next morning, I had a voicemail from him, and he said, please call me. I called him back, and he said, hey, the tour is not a problem. He goes, what are you doing Easter Sunday? And like, nothing, just hanging out with mom and dad. He says, I have four floor seats for you for Spurs Rockets. Awesome. You know, if you're interested. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And so we go to the game, and then we go and tour the locker room. And look, when we toured the locker room, the messaging behind it, everything's so intentional. I've always told everybody, there's only one story sitting in the locker room, and that story was there. And it is the Ode to the Stonecutter. And it is a poem by Jacob Riss, who was an immigrant rights activist in the 1920s. And every one of my team members has a rock on their desk with the same story. And the story is about perseverance. And it says, when nothing seems to help, I go look at a stonecutter hammering away at his rock, perhaps 100 times without as much as a crack showing in it. Yet on the 101st blow, it will split in two. And I know it was not that blow that did it, but all that had gone before. And the story of the stonecutter is a message of, we're just pounding the rock. And pounding the rock is a message of perseverance. It's a question we're answering daily as an organization, is, are we better today than we were yesterday? Because that is just another knock on the rock, and eventually it will split. It's something that has been my mantra for years, for at least the last decade. All of my teams have heard this. And when I was chair of MPI, Every one of my board members had a rock that was given to them that had the story of the stonecutter, and pounding the rock was our mantra. And it's something to stay focused on, but it also tells you, and again, going back to your message of, you know, fear and overcoming fears, that not everything's going to work. And that's just another strike on the, you know, on the rock, and eventually the rock will split. But perseverance and grit is what I think is what everybody would be driving towards. And to be successful, you have to have that grit to understand it's not always going to go your way.
I think that that is such a key ingredient in a human's ability in today's world to not just exist, but to thrive. And I am realizing in some conversations that I've been having with schools is that they're understanding that they have to start teaching this because it's not being taught. And it, you know, you may say, oh, well, this is just one of those things that you learn through experience, or one of these things that you know, is intrinsic, but it's not. And we need to teach more about how to persevere, because that is what helps people to be successful and to lead with a bigger purpose in mind. So I'm really on board with that, and I need to get myself one of those rocks.
Well, you know what? It'll be my pleasure. I will send it your way. You know what?
You may change your mind. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say one other thing I will mention that's really cool. When you're walking to the locker room, that same story is replicated 4 different times in the hallway as you're walking to the Spurs locker room. But here's the point. It's 4 different times in 4 different languages, because when they get a new foreign player that doesn't speak English, they translate the story into their language.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome. Now you're giving me chills already. I knew it was coming, but.
Well, I think it's so cool, because as a leader, it talks about, you know, why would you do that? Because it tells the person, we know where you come from. We know who you are, and you are part of our family. Right. And that is just an important, and when I talk about their culture, that's part of that fascination. But everybody needs to understand that story. That's why it's translated.
That's fantastic. And now for the part. Okay, so Michael, you're famous in the industry, and so a lot of people are going to really hate me for this next question. because there's this perception that, you know, you're just like this awesome dude, but I know that you got there by, you know, being human. So I'm going to ask you something that I like to ask my guests. And what are you afraid of? What has been that moment in your life that maybe you struggled with, or you had challenge with, or that caused you to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning? You know, what was it for you?
Well, yeah, you know, there's a couple of things I would stress. And because I think it's a little complex, that question for me. Because it's twofold. If you ask me what drives me and what is my biggest fear, is that I feel that clock ticking. I don't feel that we have enough time. And what I mean by that is there's so much that I want to do. And the interesting thing is my perspective is not about the job or the work. It's about the impact we have to people and to the world. I always say that we're here for such a short period of time. And, you know, there's an actual study. If you look at the entire universe and the history of the universe and how old our universe is, our entire life, if you live to be 100 years old, represents one day in that universal plateau. Mm-hmm. And that always puts it into perspective for me. We're here for such a small period. How do you make the greatest amount of impact in a short period of time? That is something that it is a fear. It is a fear that I'm running out of time. So what does that do? It keeps me extremely focused. And I hear people all the time that are even in my organization, like, we don't know how you do everything you do. And you're kind of crazy because you're all over the place. that's what drives that, though. Yeah. It is a fear driving that I am going to run out of time. And the funny thing is, you're not going to know it until it's there. You know, you're just going to get T-boned out of nowhere and all of a sudden, no, it's over. And that is, and again, I can't stress enough, Heather, it's not about job or success or title. It's about influence and impact to the human condition. And then there's this other part that there is not a job I have taken when I have taken these jobs over the last two or three cycles that when I first took the job, there's that moment where you sit there and say, what the hell am I thinking? Like, did I just eat or take a bite of a burger that I'm going to choke on? Because it's a big bite. I don't think you can grow without the big bite. It's like being thrown into a swimming pool and knowing you're going to learn how to swim to get to the edge. You're going to figure out a way to get there. I think that's with every new job you take. You're bringing your experience and you should have confidence in it, but you should feel really, really insecure when you first take on a new role. And if you don't, I think you're missing something. If you come in, because if you don't, I think it's your arrogance versus your humility that's in play versus understanding. I have so much to learn and so much to understand. And I think your best people that take on a new organization or a new experience, they're the ones that are able to just listen and not feeling like they have to change the world on the day they get there. Those are the people that usually miscalculate and overcorrect because they haven't had the time to take the opportunity to listen. But that's driven by fear. It's driven by that fear of, do I know what the hell I'm doing? And I've had that question with the last couple of jobs I've taken. And then when I say it's complex, I think what holds people back is there is a little bit of fear that helps them taking that great leap. And I'm living it right now. Heather, I left a really great organization and a great job. And there were some people that, you know, I definitely got the question, like, why would you leave? And because this is a really cool opportunity to be a CEO of your own organization and an organization like Alhyde, it's so already well respected. But to see, as I've told my chairman, I can see the runway. I can see what we can do with this organization. And that's exciting. It's scary as hell. It's exciting. It's a lot of heavy lifting. But it would have been easy for me to stay in my comfort zone with something that I had already done, built over 7 years and knowing was already moving and moving well. It would have been really easy to stay there. The fear is what usually holds you back because this is the scary part. And saying, are you ready to just completely make yourself uncomfortable again? And I was. And I will tell you, my first couple of days when I didn't have an office and I didn't have a building to go to, and I'm still living in Las Vegas, and I'm at a WeWork desk that I'm renting, I'm like, what am I doing here? You know, you're really trying to think, like, what's my flow going to look like? And it didn't take long, and then you get into the flow. But I've had that in every single job. And there's nothing wrong with somebody staying in their job or their organization for 20 years. As long as they didn't stay there because they were afraid to take that step.
I love that. And, you know, because I spend so much time in this realm of fear and the different things that you can do with it. And oftentimes people get stuck in the fear. And I love how you're connecting fear to driving, because I believe movement generates energy. And so you're connecting that the fear is driving you and it's generating the energy so that you can make a bigger impact. And I love that perspective. That's fantastic. One of the things that I'm going to ask you about now is a little controversial, but I can go there. So you have a really amazing passion, and I would love for you to share it with people. And I guess as my prompt for you, I'll say, share the outrage. Could you do that for me?
Well, outrage is probably a little strong, but okay. I like the passion. I've recently have been having these discussions more often. And I you know where it started was I was asked to speak at the United States Green Building Summit. And their summit was down in Orlando, and they asked me to come speak. And when I was speaking, the reason they asked me to speak was to have a little bit of a counter perspective and actually perspective to what was being discussed. And, you know, and I listened to a lot of discussion where you're hearing a lot of people, you know, literally have this angry conversation with city officials and with hotel owners that they're not doing enough to help the environment and protect the environment and doing enough with green initiatives. And I was asked to speak because although I completely support that and I believe it's important that we save the planet, part of my messaging that they wanted me to deliver, because they've heard me say it very passionately, is, you know, can we remember who we're saving the planet for? And you are correct. I do say that I'd love to know that we would have as much outrage about the human condition as we do when we see a documentary and there's a turtle with a straw in its mouth. And, you know, I say that and sometimes people are like, ugh. And I'm like, no, it's not that I don't care about the turtle. And I'm not saying we don't need to go down that path to look at sustainability and those efforts. But my point is, why don't we have that same outrage when we look at the homeless situation that we have in the major cities? When I was in Vegas, we knew there were 40,000 kids that only got 3 meals a day when they were in school. Why isn't there that same passion and outrage? Because within 9 months, when we see a documentary, straws are all of a sudden the evil thing and are out of most restaurants. And if we have them today, they're paper, they're not plastic. We were able to do that in 9 months to a year. If we would have that same passion and focus towards some of the human suffering we have in this country and in the world, I think we could have that same impact. And that's where my anger does kick in. Why can't we have that same focus to knock out the human condition problems that we have around the globe? And I think, you know, I live and work in the hospitality industry. I think they're the best position, or we're the best position, to be able to take that on, because we're in every community. We're able to galvanize a lot of organizations. There's a lot of local businesses that all depend on those same hospitality organizations. How do we focus as an industry on the right things? And I always think that part of the issue is there's too much noise, because our industry is driven by organizations that have membership, and the members, depending on what those issues are, it becomes a whack-a-mole. We may have an LGBT issue, and that becomes the issue now for this one organization to focus on. And somebody else wants to focus on sustainability, and that's the issue. And someone else is focusing on women empowerment, and that's the issue. And I think part of our challenge is we haven't, as an industry, sat there and said, can we pick the one thing? All those organizations are going to focus on those things, but can we focus on one thing that we're all going to do together? You know, if we're really going to tackle the human trafficking issue, which I applaud the industry on taking it on, we'd have a better impact if that was our focus for a year. And that's all we were going to do as an industry. We were all going to focus and make sure that regardless of the organization, regardless of your company, that was going to be the messaging and the education that we hammer home. We'd probably really start making a major dent in all those situations. So that's kind of my, yes, that's me on my pulpit. I'm off. But there is a passion about that, that I just think the older I get, the more I am. And again, I see the clock ticking. The older I get, the more I think we could do more to help the human condition. And I think we have a responsibility as human beings to help the human condition.
And I think that what you're saying about coming together, we can do amazing things when we come together and when we focus, you know, as an organization, as an industry, as a community, whatever it is, when we really come together for a period of time, we can make stuff happen. So I think that what you're saying really makes a lot of sense. And so I'll help you share that. I'll get that out there for you. I love it. I'm on board for sure. And unbelievably, we are, you know, 34 minutes. So I'm going to ask for you to share, you know, you can share the Alhai website or how people might be able to get a hold of you if they have any questions or anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, if anybody has any questions or follow up, they easily can just email me directly. And my email is mdominguez@alhai.com. And, you know, the funny thing is, if you go to any of my social media sites and If you look at my business card, I only have one phone number and it's my cell phone. And I know that freaks people out, but I'm like, why would you not have a number that people could actually get a hold of you on? So it is that number, and it's 702-237-9132. And it's out there publicly, but if anybody ever wants to get a hold of me, they can utilize that for text or call. And look, I appreciate the opportunity, Heather. I think it's an important message that you're driving, and it's something, you know, I completely, even as much experience as I have to focus on, you know, making sure you keep your fears in a bottle every day.
Mm-hmm. I think that you demonstrate that driving through the fear with all that you do, and it's really inspiring. And so I am thrilled that you were able to come on and share the inspiration with our people. Did you have any, you know, last final words of wisdom that you'd like to share before we head off?
This is going to sound really funny. I think the best advice you could be giving people is don't be afraid to not be afraid.
Oh, I love it. Yep.
Because it takes courage to say, I'm going to put my fear in a box and I'm not going to let it stop me. And to know fear is always there. It just can't stop you from moving forward. One of the things I share with everyone in my organization is if you tell me you haven't failed, I'm not impressed. It just means you haven't taken any risk. Mm-hmm. And that to me is the important message. If you're going to take risks, that's where the greatest learnings and growth come from. It means you're going to fail from time to time.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Michael. I appreciate it. And all of you listeners, we'll see you next time. I'm sure you enjoyed it. Thank you.